Hey, listen up, idiots. This is your spoiler warning. Also, you might get offended, so warning for that too, you idiots.
Hello, my name is Kyle.
And my name is Ryan.
And when our powers combine, we form
Experience Grind Podcast.
The podcast that is currently right in the middle of its October Halloween celebration. We did not come up with a new name.
We said we were going to come up with a new name, and we definitely did not.
Totally lied to everybody. Hold on, keep talking, Ryan.
So, in our second installment of our Halloween Oktoberfest, we are going to revisit another sequel of a movie we covered last year, which is 2011's The Thing, not to be confused with 1980-something's The Thing. No, this is a prequel to the John Carpenter horror movie that we discussed last year. And much like American Werewolf in Paris versus American Werewolf in London, I think there are going to be some issues.
Yeah, I don't see how there can't.
Yeah. But, yeah. I think it's safe to say, even before we begin, it's never a good idea to remake movies. Never. It hardly ever works. I mean, granted, the 80s The Thing is a remake of the 50s yes. The Thing.
That's when it
works. And
it works
much better.
Yeah. I think I agree for the most part, because I think the worst thing about this current year we're living in is that they've remade everything from the 80s, and it's all
so
awful.
The one beacon of light in 2017 that gives me hope is It.
Yeah.
It. The remake of It. I think, I mean, I have no nostalgia for that 1990s version with Tim Curry. I think Tim Curry does something fun and interesting with Pennywise, but he's not scary. He was never ever scary or intimidating, but he's funny.
My thing with it is, and I say that my thing with it is that I don't.
That's great. That's two puns in one.
I don't personally consider it a remake, considering that the original is actually like a made for TV miniseries.
Yeah. Okay.
So I've always approached the new It as a new thing. It's its own thing. It has a movie budget, but then you have things like Point Break, and like even Roadhouse is getting a fucking remake.
Roadhouse
is getting a remake with Ronda Rousey as the Patrick Swayze character.
All right,
they're remaking fucking Top Gun.
Wait, what? I thought they were just doing a sequel or something.
I believe it's a remake. From everything I've read,
that's dumb. Let's go back to this Roadhouse thing.
Let's do it.
One, I have no love for the original Roadhouse.
I don't either.
None. I don't give a fuck. I never found Patrick Swayze as a convincing lead actor in anything. You can go back.
I just don't like.
You can
his
go back
movies.
To our Mother's Day episode with April.
I just don't like his movies.
I don't care.
I don't like Red Dawn. I don't like Dirty Dancing.
Nope.
I don't like Roadhouse. I don't like Ghost.
Nope.
I just don't like Patrick Swayze. I don't like Point Break.
Agreed.
Even with Keanu Reeves.
Agreed.
I don't like Point Break. I don't think it's a great movie. It's really dumb.
It's a cult hit, and everybody seems to love it, but I'm with you. I think it's a bad movie. I just don't understand why it gets the love. But I am very interested in a Roadhouse with Ronda Rousey. That's weird. One, I mean, I'm interested in like a morbid curiosity way. Ronda Rousey can act. See Entourage movie. See anytime she pops up in anything, she's horrible. It's not like
Fast and Furious 6.
That's Gina Carano.
No, it's Ronda Rousey. She's head of the.
Nah, it's Carano.
No, Ronda Rousey's in one of them because she
fights.
She fight
Michelle Rodriguez.
Yes.
Yeah. You. I don't have my phone on me. You look it up. Is Gina Carano?
I will bet you $5 right here, right now, that is Ronda Rousey. Let's shake on this.
Yes, absolutely. No, I know, because I was all into Gina Carano because
I was
pulling her for her for Wonder Woman.
Gina Carano is fucking great. But like,
also, I have seen all the Fast and Furious
movies. I know you
movies.
Have. And this is what is going to make it hurt even more. Fast and Furious.
All right, this is great. I'm going to keep talking while Kyle looks this up and I get $5 on the spot. But if I win, I'm going to graciously say, you don't owe me anything. But
she's
if I lose...
Furious 7.
Shit. Okay. Oh, Ronda Rousey is in 7, not 6. 6 is Gina Carano.
She is the head of the Dubai
security
team, and she fights Michelle Rodriguez.
So we are both correct, because...
Because I said 6.
Gina Carano is in 6.
Okay.
She is, because 6 is when Dom's team goes up like the mirror mirror evil version of their team. So you have like a one for one, like there's a Vin Diesel on that team, there's a Michelle Rodriguez on the other bad team, and it's Gina Carano on the other
team.
Okay,
so it's Fast and Furious 6. Right. So we were both half right, half
perfect.
Wrong.
Yeah, okay. I'm okay with that. Great.
So we both pay each other $250.
About $250?
About $250. I mean about $350. No, all right, so what the fuck were we even talking about?
We were talking about remakes in this current year.
Yes.
And just, it's almost never a good idea. Like, no. There are those bright few shining examples that come through, and it works. And maybe that's, you know what, that should be our intro topic. Let's talk about that. Kyle, what are some remakes that you love, like, that work? I mean, we just mentioned It, and I think we both really enjoyed that.
Yes, we did. And the thing, the, mm-hmm. if you, I would count this as a remake.
It's, I don't know if, oh, yes, yes, this the one. 80s version,
the,
yes.
The 2011 is a prequel.
It is, yes.
Let me think, remakes that I like.
I'll start while you think then, because I have one ready to go, much like our last, I mean, we just mentioned it, I mentioned it in the last episode, but the Evil Dead remake I thought was fantastic. Mm. It is... nothing.
It is actually really awesome.
Yeah, it's nothing like the original. It's a straight horror movie. There is nothing funny, cheesy, or comic about it. But it works because of that. Because it's able to do something very different and just take it and run. And I think it works real well, and I really hope we get like a sequel.
It does play with and pay homage to the original too, which
it does.
Great.
Yeah, it's very respectful. You see a lot of nods, and you even get like Bruce Campbell at the end. Turn the camera, go groovy, and that's fantastic, you know. But I think there's that one. That really, I like. That might be it. Like, there aren't too many that
there's
enjoy.
Hardly ever been a remake that I'm on board with. I'm trying to think too. Even though you know, you gave me time to think, it's still hard.
It's okay. I mean, I can keep naming shit ones. Like, why did we need a Total Recall with Colin Farrell?
Or RoboCop?
Do you guys remember? What the fuck was that RoboCop? That yeah, I forgot
again,
about that.
It's
yeah,
this remake reboot shit that just doesn't fucking work, and they just do it to cash in. And like, mm-hmm. Here's the thing: I've never seen any of them because I know they're garbage and I know what they are.
I did get suckered into Total Recall. This is gonna make me lose all credit. Die Hard 4, Lippy or Die Hard, is a secret guilty pleasure. Like, I kind of love that movie.
Really?
It's not a Die Hard movie, but, like, I can divorce myself enough. Like, I have a lot of fun with the action in that movie. And so when that director next movie was Total Recall, I was interested. I was like, all right, this is going to be good action at least. So let's... And it's not. None of the action is convincing or well done. It is a weird... I don't know, set piece for Kate Beckinsale to show off her body, because so, Lynn Wiseman, the director, is married to Kate Beckinsale and does the underworld movies, and it's all just fetishes. Like, we get it. You love your wife. That's cool. I don't need to see this as an audience member 10 times.
Give me a fucking actress that can act.
Yeah. And fucking Kate Beckinsale can act. I've seen like Love and Prejudice. Fucking great. Or Love and Friendship. Is Love and Friendship or Love and Prejudice? What's
the
classic
Dickens
one? It's
not Love and Prejudice because that's Pride and
Prejudice. Pride and Prejudice is Love and Friendship. But she can act. I don't know why the director can't bring that out in her in those underworld movies.
That's probably because she's comfortable around him. So
Maybe. But yeah, I think we've just proved it here. There aren't really too many great remakes.
I'm still, you know, I've had all this time to think, and I cannot think of a good remake outside of, like, Evil Dead.
Oh, I've got one.
What's another one?
Ocean's 11, the Soderbergh. It's a remake.
Sure. Okay.
All right. So instead of, like, the Rat Pack from, like, the 50s and 60s, you get Clooney and Pitt and all of them. And that's, like, a ton of fun. Like, that's a fantastic remake, I think. So...
Remakes! They suck, man!
Yes. Yeah, it's... Yeah, it's we can really rack our brains and try to come up with examples, but it's going to be like such an obvious ratio of like one good one to 20 bad ones. I won't even say bad, but like mediocre, needless to bad ones.
I would say needless. That's what they
are. A lot of them are just not needed. They're not even bad. They're just fine, but they're remaking great classics. So with that in mind, Kyle.
Yes.
Let's jump in to our analysis of The Thing 2011 after a break.
Yeah. And so our bumper is going to be Ryan is going to read the IMDb description of The Thing 2011. So, Ryan, take it away, sir.
Awesome. Is that it?
That's it. I mean,
at an Antarctica research station, the discovery of an alien craft leads to a confrontation between graduate student Kate Lloyd and scientist Dr. Sander Halvorsen. That is
not what the movie is.
Arguably not like a fucking small fraction of the movie. Very, 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 very small bit of the movie.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, IMDb failed us.
So in that vein, we'll also go ahead and throw a little bit of music from Ennio Morricone. Or
Ennio Morricone.
Ennio
That's
Morricone.
What I pronounce about. Who knows? Foreign names are weird.
Here it is. It's some weird shit that's synthesized. And then we'll be right back. I like how you looked at the camera.
I know, because I get used to doing it.
Oh. And we're back. Okay. And we're back. I just come back with that.
Well, I mean, who cares? Yeah. We're podcasting. Who cares?
Hi, everybody. So, The Thing 2011, buddy.
Yes. This is going to be an interesting one.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to disagree with, I think, the large critical and audience consensus and say I like this movie. I don't dislike it in the slightest bit. I think it's a good movie that is hampered by studio decisions. And I can act, you know, for once, unlike American Werewolf in Paris, where I just speculated about who's to blame here, there is so much documented on this movie when it comes to the behind-the-scenes issues, and like the writers have spoken out. Like, they spoke to bloodydisgusting.com about it. There's like a long, like, it was like an hour and a half interview with the writers that they put in text form. So it's like pages and pages of them telling of kind of the struggle between the studio and the writers and the directors. That, you know, what Hollywood does is they get these young directors who are inexperienced and have done just like very tiny things, put them in charge of big budget things because they can boss them around. Mm-hmm. And so you get like Colin Trevorrow in Jurassic World, which is, you know, some people find it fun. And I think even those people can feel like is it as good as Jurassic Park?
Absolutely
no,
not.
It's messy, and you can see the studio beats all over it. And you see that a lot. And The Thing, 2011, was sadly one of those. Originally, the studio wanted it to be a verbatim remake. And everybody who was attached to the project was like, no.
No, we're not doing that.
They fought tooth and nail to make it a prequel.
Thank you to all of you.
Yes. And I think because of that, it works. That's enough separation from like a remake. Like, they, sure. You hit a lot of the same beats and the same kind of elements, and it's essentially just like a bottle episode where a bunch of people are paranoid together. But I think
what works is is that there is a prequel in the actual need. I'm not need, but there it's not just something they threw together. There is a Norwegian base that is referenced, and they visit it as we're watching right now in the original.
Yeah, the original kind of takes place in media res, like as stuff has already started happening. And so it makes sense to kind of, you know, just naturally tell that beginning story. And the beginning story, I think, is pretty compelling. It's very different from the tone of The Thing. It's much quicker paced. It does not have a lot of room to breathe. It's not very tense, and it feels more action movie, or like almost like a haunted house ride, mm-hmm. instead of the paranoid thriller that the original Thing is. And again, I think that just comes down to the studio just not allowing the film to breathe. I think the writer said originally, like, in their script, it was like 40 minutes before you ever see anything with the monster. And it's this slow burn. They're going for like a slow burn and just like punctuate with scenes of the monster. And then the studio thing, like within the first 20 minutes, you have a monster breaking out of the ice and attacking and going up to stuff. And that's unfortunate. But I still think what is here is a lot of fun. And I think it works well enough. It's not perfect. It's not great. But it's good.
As I had said before we started talking about American Werewolf in Paris, the one thing I tried to do with both these movies is to separate them to a degree from the monumental movies that they are based around.
Mm-hmm.
Because the first time I saw The Thing 2011, I saw it in theaters.
Okay.
Because I was very excited for it. Because of everything, you know, even before that movie came out, the hype they were doing were like, hey, we're not remaking it. We're going to do a prequel of the Norwegian base. And I was like, mm-hmm. Well, number one, fucking cool. All right, you're not remaking it. I respect it.
Mm-hmm.
And everything said, you know, we want to do physical props. We want to do a homage to the original in every way that we can. And I was fucking on board, man.
Yeah.
And then you get to the movie and they fuck you.
A little bit.
At the first time that I'd seen it, I was immediately already turned off.
Oh, okay, so the first time you saw it, you were not happy with it.
I did not like it. I thought it was pathetic and a cheap shot. And so
this is this the second time you've seen it?
Yeah,
this for time this podcast.
Again, I was trying to take the critical eye and detach myself, and I did find myself. I did like it a lot more.
Okay,
it's not great.
Agreed.
But to borrow a phrase from you, it's fine.
Yeah,
it's very serviceable. I've seen way better horror movie stuff. Mm-hmm. It's got a lot of nice shots. It has a sincere love for the original thing that
a lot
comes
of love
through. It like bleeds through in a lot of it. So that, it works for me.
Yeah,
because I get it. Because I love this movie. I love the original, The Thing, and so I appreciate their attempt.
Yeah.
And I cannot fault them for falling short, especially at studio's behest rather than creator's behest.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And I think that's a lot of it. But like, there are a lot of things that are paid off or things that they reference in this prequel. This is so hard to talk about. Why do they have to be both called The Thing? I really wish it had a different name. There's no reason for that. But in The Thing prequel,
you could have called it The Thing Site Alpha
or something. Just give it a subtitle.
The Site Alpha is where it starts, you know.
Yeah, and I think that's the issue a lot of people have with Ghostbusters when it came out. It's like, just give it a different thing. Don't call it two things, because then whenever you have like a critical discussion about it, you had to say like The Thing 2011 or 1988.
Well, see, I don't think you have to differentiate that hard. I think in the general zeitgeist and communication, this is known as The Thing 2011. You call it that.
That's true.
And people know like what you're talking. And then if you just talk about The Thing, they know you're not talking about the 51. You're talking about John Carpenter's The
That's
Thing.
True. It probably, so, yeah, you won't be having too many issues. But going back to like the details that pay off, like there are a lot of small things that really you can tell they went back to the 80s version and really like worshipped and like went over every little detail. Joel Edgerton's in this movie, and at one point like he attacks something with an axe and it's in the same position as it is in the 80s version. It's like those little details, like you can tell they were really trying. The creators behind this were really trying, like, and it's a shame. Like, have you seen any of the company that did the practical effects that were going to be the big thing, Amalgamated Dynamics Incorporated?
You remembered.
That was so hard for me to remember. Have you seen the test footage?
Oh yes.
It looks good. It's
really good. And
it's all practical effects, and they all look good.
What's crazy is that it's like 95% practical, and then they wanted to use like CG to like hide the actor's face and things, which would fucking work way better than what we get, which unfortunately has...
It's a lot more CG.
It's super CG. And what it does is similar to American Werewolf in Paris, is it starts to pull you out of the movie because it's so obvious.
Yeah.
Like, it's... And it's because it's not even, like, great CG in the fact that, like, it looks like it's just plastered in because the lighting is usually different.
Yeah.
People that have seen the original The Thing, one of the biggest differences between the two is that when something transforms in this version, it is a fucking bloody, gory mess. When you watch The Thing 2011, it's very neat. There's no blood.
It is. It's
there's
very
no dripping.
Plasticky.
It's plasticky. There's no slime, no anything. And it's such a jarring difference. Like,
yeah,
there should be a lot more blood and just visceralness.
Yeah, that's what I would want, is like just like the drippiness. Like the like kind of like how you get in the original, or like The Fly with Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah.
Just like that real... I think this might also be an issue with horror movies now, too, is like our cameras are so good that you're able to discern details that you weren't able to in old ones. And it's I think Jim Sterling at one point, and yes, I know this is a movie episode, but we're going to delve into games real quick here. Jim Sterling had a Jimquisition on why horror games work and why certain horror games don't work. And it comes down to like the shit quality, like the shittier quality, the graphic fidelity of games, the more scary they are, because you're not able to pick out those details. You're not able to see like the cracks and the seams and like the effects and everything. So you go back to these older movies like American Werewolf in London and The Thing, and it looks good because they use shadows and light to hide the effects, and there's film grain to kind of hide it too, and it's not crisp and clean enough that you can discern like, oh wow, that looks really practical, oh that looks like so much makeup or whatever.
So we're watching this Blu-ray cut and that looks pretty fucking good.
Yes.
Compared to what we see in CG.
And even here's the thing too. I know it's weird because I can say CG takes a lot of manpower and work to make it effective. And the same can be said for practical, but even if I'm taking out of a movie with a practical makeup effect, it doesn't hurt the movie for me. It endears it to me more. It's like somebody actually made that. Like that is a real thing that's out there, as opposed to just something in a computer. And sure, maybe even more manpower and work goes into the computer stuff, but I still just think it's much, much more, I don't know, charming to see those practical effects. And just, I don't know. I don't know. Does that make sense? How do you feel about the digital versus practical
argument here? So I've watched, I'm sure as you do too, you fall down YouTube holes. I've watched a lot of like YouTube videos that talk about, I think the most common thing that people say is you only see bad CG.
Yes.
The best CG you never notice.
It's like the rocket jump thing. It's like CG sucks, except it doesn't. That one.
I think
where
so,
they
yeah.
talk about like Game of Thrones and like how almost every single fucking background in Game of Thrones, all CG, but you'll never notice.
And like movies and things. Mm-hmm. So the things that make it really obvious are things that you know don't exist. So like a CG of a ship at sea is not going to throw you off as badly as like a fucking six-armed monster that shows up on that ship, because number one, you already know that thing is not real. So that's where I think realistic effects help ground it, because when you use puppets and animatronics and things like that, it's a physical thing in this physical world that gives it a weight compared to a computer image that you already know isn't there. Now, we are always getting better. The fucking Hulk in like the Avengers movies, both of them, you know that's not real, but holy shit, that looks real.
Go back to our Guardians of the Galaxy 2 episode to hear me gushing about CG and just how believable it can be, like that you can buy into a fucking talking tree and raccoon, and you shouldn't be able to.
They're getting better, like, you know, and especially directors that get it. Again, and that's why I think it works, because Guardians is directed by James Gunn, who's been in this business. He's not a young upstart that they're giving it to and bossing him around. Mm-hmm. He knows the weight of a character and what it's going to take up in the physical world. It's not just pasted on. I think his brother fills in for Rocket.
He does. Sean Gunn.
Yeah, Sean Gunn is playing Rocket on set, so that there's always... It's
Baby
not...
Groot, they had like a little 12-inch maquette that they walked around on a stick for people to talk and interact with.
Yeah, and it gives it a reference point.
It does.
And
It allows the actors to actually act on screen and have something to reference. It's really hard to just reference a floating ball on a stick
ball.
Like in a Transformers movie, you know?
Yeah. But again, I think it can be done well. But again, my big thing is that when you're coming from both American Werewolf in London and The Thing, John Carpenter's, those two movies defined practical effects for the next 20 years.
Yes.
And so I feel like their sequels should have paid homage to them in that aspect. Because while they are great movies, they are so well known for those effects in general that to throw computer generated stuff on it cheapens it and takes away from the homage you want to pay to it.
It does. I mean, those two movies have a lot of other great things going for them, but like they were both nominated for fucking awards. Their effects are so good. And to have The Thing in American Werewolf in Paris come out and the CG just be like, run in the mill, and not even like great CG for the time. Like, I wouldn't say, I don't know, I can't speak about American Werewolf in Paris because I didn't see it when I was younger, so I don't know how it stacked up. But like, I remember like seeing this when it came out. It was not great, but it wasn't bad. It was just fine. And like, you don't want to have a Thing movie where the CG is fine.
Yes.
Like, you should
be
doing
genre
something
defining,
more.
And you should. You should pay homage. Look at that thing, so people can't see, but look at that right fucking there. There's
just
nothing like that in...
Big bloody pile of Cthulhu tentacly mess.
There's
it's
nothing
great.
Like that in The Thing 2011 at any point.
No. It's... Well, and that's the thing. It's fucking so frustrating because they buried the practical in CG. And really, guys, just if you have seen The Thing 2011, or if you're just curious, like, please check out, like... the behind-the-scenes features from ADI, the Amalgamated Dynamics, Inc., because every single monster in that movie was a practical effect that they just pretty much overwrite
with
CG.
Over it.
And it's unfortunate because like the test footage they have looks good. And it's even more sad because I really think the monster designs in the 2011 version are kind of interesting and like creative. They're very neat. There's like one, I don't even remember if it was, I can't remember now, but it was like a giant vagina face with like three eyeballs in the middle.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was in the final version or not, but this was going to be like the reveal of like the Thing's kind of form. And like they show a very...
It's not in the original.
It's not in the original.
I'll tell you where it is.
Is it in the... Not
no,
the original. Is it in the Thing 2011 one?
It's not in the Thing 2011, and I'll tell you where it was supposed to be.
Where was it supposed to be?
So at the end when Mary Elizabeth Winstead is on the ship.
Yes.
And she comes to that giant room with the Tetris in the middle.
Yes. Yeah, the Tetris ball.
That's where it was. It was in. It was actually in that tube as
God
the original.
Damn it.
And so they, in doing reshoots, they cut out this whole thing of the original Thing's appearance.
See,
and what it
I,
does.
I thought I didn't see
and
it
so
in there.
And they slapped that Tetris thing over. Because it's like a giant tube in the middle
that
it's suspended in.
The most offensive use of that. Because that creature, and again, check out that 5-minute footage reel on YouTube of their stuff, is fucking interesting and creepy.
Yeah.
And you only see like 2 seconds of it. Like it's a very quick glimpse in the behind the scenes footage. But it's creepy. And instead we get a fucking floating Tetris sphere. And it's you are not incorrect. Like there are literally Tetris shapes. Like you see like... The
and it's very odd. It doesn't work because they've just plastered that onto that original scene. And her reaction is the same because she's staring at it in awe and wonderment. And
but
it's
not
because
very wondrous. Like you look at it, it's like, okay.
Yeah.
It's a ball.
It's some. It's not.
It's a
it's
ball
not
of floating
ball.
Metal
it's,
pieces.
It's very odd. And that's because it's completely plastered on and they cut that whole section of that.
Yeah.
That arc. So.
Yeah,
like the whole ending was completely different from the ending we got in 2011. So
yeah, I read about that and the characters. Man, that's the thing, is with the original, not the original, the remake in '80s, the characters are good. They all have like kind of their personality, and you feel for like even like the least underrated characters.
The
and
black
this
dude
one
on roller skates, you feel for him.
Yes, this one you don't, only contextually, like, oh man, not Ramona Flowers, like I hope she makes out, but you're bringing other stuff into it. Oh, Tormund's in this, oh I hope he makes, oh fucking Mr. Echo from Lost, yeah I want him to live, but that's it. Like otherwise they're just, they don't have a lot.
This one also has a really fucking big body count, the Thing 2011.
Yeah, nobody makes it out. Yeah, nobody.
It's a big body count, and I was surprised.
Spoilers,
by that
too. Sorry.
Yeah, I want to get into some of the other aspects of it.
Please,
so,
yeah, I know we spent a long time on that. Yeah. But it is, I think, the biggest, most contentious
yes,
point,
and that is very it. And if you get past that, like, there is some good in this movie too. It's a perfectly fine, serviceable movie. It did pass the Mandy test. We haven't talked about the Mandy test for a while.
No, we haven't.
But I think. I took her to make her watch this with me in theaters because I was very excited about it. I don't think she even remembered it, but she really enjoyed watching it this time. She's like, that was a really good, pretty scary movie. And I was like, all right, man. Mm-hmm. She really liked all the transformations, even though I didn't, because, again, compared to this one, it's such a drastic change. There's nothing. Like, dude, a dude rips his fucking face and chest in half, and there's not even, like, a drop of blood running down.
It's oddly bloodless. It's weird, and I think it's because of CG, because that would be so much more money to make liquid CG effects.
I think they were also shooting for PG-13 to get a bigger audience, which don't ever do that.
But was this this wasn't PG-13, right?
I don't think it was, but I can't remember. It might have been.
That's the thing, is I just watched this movie again today.
Yeah.
And I can't think of anything that would really push outside of R. Because even, like, the one thing I could think of that comes close is, like, the one girl transformation.
Into R?
Yeah. Like, I don't think...
Even the girl that transforms, there's no tits.
There's no tits. And she kind of removes her clothes as she's transforming, but there's no nudity.
I think...
Maybe some of the violence is...
I think they...
Pushes it...
They were trying to push for a PG-13 to, again, try to reach a bigger fucking... But don't...
Which you're missing the point then again.
Again, but this was 2011, before we had the big successes of all these resurgence of R movies like the Mad Max and Deadpool, and that really proved like, hey, you can make a hard R and it'll still do well if you do it right and you pay the respect that it's due.
Yeah.
But I wanna move past this respect shit and all that. I wanna talk about just this movie on its own and its merits.
I will say I think there is a lot of respect still in the film.
Yes,
you can
absolutely.
Still tell that a lot of people really loved the original or the remake. God, why are there three fucking Thing movies?
You can call it the original because I think everybody knows. All right. We're not obviously referencing the 1950 version.
But you can tell they had a lot of love and respect for the Carpenter version.
Yes.
You can still, even with all the studio meddling and the PG-13-ness and like the really bloodless stuff, you can still tell they really wanted to make something good.
Yeah. What I liked, so the music at the very beginning of The Thing 2011 is very reminiscent of The Thing, John Carpenter's. That's the only time that music shows up.
And at the end.
Towards the end.
Because you get the helicopter coming back.
Yes.
That is the start. And then like that, boom, 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 boom.
Which is great, but for the most of it's a lot of generic symphony stuff, which I would have preferred they had more of it throughout.
Oh my God, Kyle. Oh my God, Kyle. Oh my God, Kyle. We need to quit this podcast because we have failed every single listener because we did not talk. You're saying the generic music and the thing really brought this up. We did not talk about any of the goddamn awful soundtrack in American Werewolf in Paris.
We did not. Let's do it
right
now.
What the fuck?
So outside of the fucking Bush song, there's a goddamn motherfucking Smash Mouth song right in the middle of that movie.
Not only that, there's like a scene like straight out of Fast and Furious where a bunch of cars are boxing this guy in, and it's like this big action scene. And they have like a Goldfinger fucking ska song playing.
It's like a punk song, and he's just trying to run away. Again,
what?
that goes back. That movie was made for the fucking MTV boy generation. Dude.
I think that solidifies your argument.
Yeah, that's exactly
so,
what it was.
Me having watched both these back to back, going into thing and getting like this generic orchestral thing, whatever, fucking already, like, I'm loving this so much more because it's not goddamn
Smash Mouth. Dude, like, it's funny because at the time when they made American Werewolf in Paris, Smash Mouth was not the meme that it is today. Like, it was still like a thing, you know?
It's before All Star came out and ruined it.
Well, not even all, like, you know, it wasn't a fucking joke. Like, they even show up in Rat Race, and it's kind of cool because Smash Mouth at that time wasn't.
Oh, shit. They are. Like, the band itself shows up. That's, yeah. That's fucking weird.
And Rat Race
that's
is
fucking
a fucking
weird.
Awesome movie.
I have not revisited it since the early 2000s. I really liked it. I'm afraid to go back.
The fucking.
But it's weird that the same actor is in Rat Race and American Werewolf, and they both feature Smash Mouth songs. That's
Dude,
weird.
That's so hilarious.
I think there's even the, like, truth is out there. There's a conspiracy here.
Even me, as a big fan of American Werewolf in Paris, when Smash Mouth came on, I was like, oh, come on. Really? We're going to do a Smash Mouth pull? Son of a bitch. How am I going to defend this?
Smash Mouth came on, and I was just like, Kyle likes this movie. Yeah. I get it.
Yeah. And I was like, come on.
That's
Smash
funny.
Mouth.
But,
anyway,
yeah.
Sorry.
You're right. I this score, I think it's serviceable, but that's it. Like,
it
doesn't go
much
more than that.
Weird synth stuff, yeah. It would have served so much better. Again,
take the score from like It Follows, like the disaster piece, like chip tuney, really creepy 80s yeah. kind of stuff. Put in great, like do something like that, or like the Thor Ragnarok trailer music,
yeah.
like something like that. Go, yeah. There's so much more you can do with that. It's that's I think pretty indicative of the thing 2011 as a whole is it just feels by the numbers a little bit.
It does. And I have another point for this.
Please.
So this movie is supposed to be set in what, 1987?
It's in like mid 80s. We'll just say mid 80s.
My biggest complaint with this movie is that the guy that fucking plays Adam.
Which one is Adam? I don't know any of their names.
He's the research assistant that has the weird love tryst with Mary Elizabeth Winstead. The blonde dude who's you've seen.
Eric Christian Olsen?
Yeah.
I love him.
But, dude, that is the most fucking modern haircut. That is not a 1980s haircut.
Is it? I mean, look at Kurt Russell. Like, he has, like, the long flowing locks.
He does. But, see, that dude has, like, the blonde tips, and it's, like, brushed over his brow, and it looks like.
Are they blonde tips, or is that just his hair?
I remember, I see, he's not fully blonde, I think.
Are you sure?
I could be wrong, but I just remember, I was like, man, this looks like a very modern haircut in 1980s time. And the rest
sure.
of them have nice ones, because even yeah. Tormund, he has long hair, but it's like, it's that 1980s messy
and
style.
Isn't he one of the Norwegians?
Yes.
So you can just say, like, well, that's, you know, the Norwegian
yes.
style, they're a little bit more.
But, his style of haircut is very. Like, he even could have done like this and, yeah. like, parted it to the side, but he's got it, like, messy boy band style, all with, like, the bangs. And
you know, that didn't bother me, and I never, I didn't even notice that.
It immediately stood out because I was like, oh, yeah, that's not a 1980s haircut.
I like that you brought up Eric Christian Olsen because, one, I love him.
Yeah.
I wish he was able to do more. Like, I feel like he's not gotten the movies that are perfectly suited for him.
He was
in
Dumb and Dumber-er.
Yeah, I know. I never saw that.
I saw it. It's the worst.
I've not seen Dumb and Dumber, and I've not seen Dumb and Dumber 2.
Here's the thing. I like Dumb and Dumber or better.
I've not seen either of them, so I don't know.
Because Dumb and Dumber 2 is really bad.
I remember the trailer where they reach up the cooch of an old lady in a nursing home.
I don't remember
And then
this.
They pull out dust on Lloyd's hand, I think, and he blows it and he goes, whoo! I'm like, fuck this, I'm never gonna watch this movie.
It's really bad.
And it's sad because 30 seconds earlier in the trailer, I see Rob Riggle in like full on vending machine camouflage. I'm like, I'm gonna fucking see this movie. And then it ends on that joke. I'm like, I'm never gonna see this movie. God yeah. damn it. Like, I love Rob Riggle. Like, why would you put him in there? But yeah, That's a shame that he's just so in service. And a lot of things are underserviced here when it comes to the characters. One of the characters, you know, all right, let's positive talk. I really liked, and I cannot remember his name right now, but the guy who only speaks Norwegian.
Oh, Lars.
Lars, yes. I liked him a lot.
Lars is actually in this one. He's flying the helicopter.
Yeah, yeah. And the script writer of the 2011 prequel said they were going to try to make him clumsy constantly throughout this movie. And you would just kind of see these character beats. Like, he's constantly clumsy, and you expect him to die right away. But he doesn't. He's one of the ones that makes it. So then when in the 1980s, the thing, when he drops the grenade and blows up the helicopter, it all makes sense.
Yeah.
And it's these little details that got cut that just fucking, it sucks. Like, reading about the 2011 movie, I think there's a great movie there. Yeah. I think there's a great prequel to be made. It just was squandered. But I liked the dynamic between Mary Elizabeth Winstead's character and the boss man who brought her in.
Sure.
I thought that provided some good dynamics.
I thought he was a needless dick. He's like a dick to be a dick. Like,
I chalk that up to like the 80s sexism.
Sure, it could be.
Because this is time and place. Like, this is 30 years ago, and men and women roles were very different. Like, there were clearly defined gender roles, and this dude was alpha dogging it hard.
He was, but also, like, he's the one that pushes for scientific shit through and through. And then when Mary Elizabeth Winstead is the scientist, the biologist, she's like, hey, this is fucking weird. We can't do this. He's like, no, fuck you, you idiot.
And it's it's a pride. It's a pride. He's getting shown up by sure. this young and upcoming girl, and he's being put in her place by a girl in a base full of men, and he's being, like, put down. Again, I think this is a detail that could have been fleshed out more and probably was fleshed out more, but ended up on the chopping floor.
Yeah. Don't ever question me in front of those men again.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Like, it's that kind of thing. It's this chauvinist attitude. And I think that's, and again, it's like, oh my God, it's like looking at Rogue One or something. And it's like, that's a movie that you can tell was cut by the studio.
Yeah.
And you can see pieces there that make sense. And like when he shows up as like the final villain in the thing, like he is the entity and he's the final form and she has to fight him kind of one-on-one. That makes sense thematically,
again,
but they don't play with that. They don't do enough with
because
it.
Because that was another part that was added at the last minute by the studio. That was a big change that they made because he wasn't originally.
Yeah, it was the three-eyed vagina face.
Yep.
Yeah.
So we got that in the recuts. And
it's really disappointing because it's just like generic blobby tentacle man with ginger face. And then the ginger face is only there for like 10 seconds. And
I don't even know why the fucking face is there. It serves no purpose other than to be like, hey, remember this guy? He was a dick. Well, now he's the thing.
Again, I think you could do something thematic with there. And it's just like they didn't connect the dots properly. Yeah. And that's how I feel about it.
So I also have
what else you got in that list?
Joel Edgerton as the budget Kurt Russell or a Kurt Russell type.
Yeah.
That's obviously what that dude was in this movie for, but he does it well.
He does it very well.
Joel Edgerton is the best part of this movie, along with Mary Elizabeth Winstead. Man, she carries this fucking whole thing, and she does a fantastic job of it.
You know, she is a genre hero. She pops up in a lot of these like not great movies, and like really just gives it her fucking all.
She does every time, man. Yes. So thank you, Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
Yes. And some of them are great. Some of them are great. Some of them are not great. She is always fantastic at giving her A game. And that's appreciated.
Two dudes in Indiana have noticed, and we appreciate it. And we thank you.
Also, if you want to be on podcast, Mary Elizabeth Winstead, it won't be creepy. We will talk about whatever you want. It's cool. Yeah. But going back to Joel Edgerton, I love the shot at the end where he gets lit up on fire. It's such, and like you talk about practical effects. I don't know how much of that is practical versus CG, but it looks so good. Like there are things that hold up and look good, but it just sadly, it's never involving the alien.
Yes, yes. I like that.
That's the fucking issue.
I like that too. And what this one does is I think it answers a question that a lot of people have from this version of not Kurt Russell, but
is it Mekhi Phifer?
It's not Mekhi Phifer. He's not the black guy. Who is the black guy?
Oh, shit. It's not Mekhi Phifer. It's the guy who was in Community season 6 or 7 or
and
whatever.
Also in Requiem for a Dream.
Saints Row.
Yes. Anyways.
Buck, what is his name?
So it plays with the notion that he is not the thing.
Yeah.
In this version, because the thing cannot recreate inorganic material. So it shows that fillings cannot be recreated, mm-hmm. and also the earring that Joel Edgerton wears and that he wears at the end of The Thing 2011.
Yeah.
That cannot be recreated because it's not organic material. So that I think that's kind of cool that answers that question.
I also think that's a good twist. Instead of just like verbatim doing like the blood tests, like the fillings and the inorganic material, I think that's really cool.
One, I like that it still gives it some variable, like,
yeah,
because even the dude says, he's like, these are all porcelain, I don't have my real teeth.
Oh, so you're gonna kill me because I flossed my teeth?
Yeah.
And like, there are good lines and the paranoia stuff's there. Did you notice? I noticed because I love the song, but Mary Elizabeth Winstead's character is listening to Overkill by Men at Work at the beginning, yeah. which is a song all about paranoia.
Which is,
it's fantastic.
I didn't notice that till I was reading later.
Oh, yeah?
But that's a thing that's referenced too. So
I was like, that's Overkill. Who can it be? No, it's not. That's not it. No, fuck it. That's a different Men at Work song. I can't think of Overkill right now. Continue.
So you've got some things that you want to say. I think we're gonna work towards wrapping this up.
Yes.
But I think I'll save my question for after you have said what you have said.
Because yeah.
it's just really kind of general and more dumb. So.
Well, sure. I just, talking about this movie, I think it's easy to kind of get into the weeds with kind of the nitpicks. Because there are legit nitpicks to have with this movie. I'm so bad at this because I'm very easy to go to nitpicks.
Yeah.
I'm a negative person. I don't
Especially,
know if you've known
again,
this, but
comparing it to such a fantastic movie as the
it is, it's
thing,
hard.
Like, yeah. God damn it, dude.
But I do think this is a very fun movie. It is not the classic that The Carpenter was, but it is very fun. And I think one of the scenes that works the best is the big bar set piece in the beginning of the third act of the movie.
It also has a giant body count in this scene, which is great.
A lot of people go out real quick.
I think like half the team at this one point.
Real quick. And it is chaos. It is just utter chaos what's happening. And you get like, I guess, the explanation of the conjoined people corpse that you find in the 80s version in the Erik Christian Olsen. I don't even know that's his name. I keep saying it with such confidence, but I don't know if that's his name. We'll
I'm gonna
see.
Look it up. You keep talking.
But you get this character getting absorbed alive with the thing creature. And it's this. Oh, my God. His guttural screams as his face is like merging into this thing. And it's CG and it's overdone.
But he's also very terrified. It is Erik Christian Olsen. Very nice.
Awesome. Good. Okay. But he sells it. That actor just sells like the horror of it. And when I saw it originally, I was like, oh my God, that just, it made my skin crawl. I had goosebumps. Like the music swells up just perfectly. And this is why I can't poo-poo on the score too much, because like it works for this fucking scene.
Well, and it's really bad too. Like it's a really crazy scene because he can't move away. And the thing that is transformed walks over him and starts.
It's so slow and inevitable.
It starts, it like smushes his face next to his, like they're going cheek to cheek. And then his cheek gets stuck to it because it starts absorbing him. And it is very, very unnerving. And
yeah.
then it becomes this really actually fucking cool monster that starts to haunt Mary Elizabeth Winstead and Joel Edgerton throughout the rest of that act of the movie before they eventually dispose of it.
Yeah, and Tormund also gets a similar end with a little hand thing monster centipede kind of hybrid crawls up on it to his face and then like just forces it into his mouth and face. And it's the same thing. It's like it just starts to merge and they start to just become one. And the fucking like one half his face is just kind of mush garble garbage and like he has one normal eye, and the look that that character gives to Mary Elizabeth Olsen, or ha,
Winstead.
Mary Winstead, the fucking Olsens, ruining it all. just the please kill me.
Yeah,
it sticks with you,
and it's weird because the part that is being affected by the thing, like his eyeball, is almost like jelly like, and you can see it moving underneath. It's really that's where CG is well done. Mm-hmm. It's very nice. But yeah. I totally agree with you. That whole bar scene is a massive, nice turning point. Like, that's when things really—that's our crescendo to the final act.
Yeah.
And, but no, it's very well done. It's very enjoyable. Again, you know, that transformation is just—it's a bit off. Again, I don't want to hate on the CG because we've done that. But again, I don't know how much you could have done with that practically. And I do like the scene where that monster is later hunting the Joel Edgerton character,
through the
kitchen, similar to Jurassic Park.
Yeah, I had the Velociraptors in Jurassic Park idea in my head too.
That's very nice.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think my last question to you, Ryan, is the thing. Would you consider it in the Eldritch Horror Cthulhu mythos? Do you classify it there?
Well, this is interesting, and I know it's pretty topical considering the Tadpog guys are going through their Call of Cthulhu RPG right now. They finished it? Okay. With Chandra Korn and all of them.
Yeah.
I've maybe listened to an episode or two. It's fun. Check it out. Sponsorship.
No, it's really
good. No, but it was fun from what I heard. Yeah.
A live Let's Play of an entire D&D campaign.
Yeah.
Campaign that I think they created. It's based off some sort of D&D booklet that I don't know
the system it's based
off.
It's
a more modern one.
I've heard a few like podcasts or recordings of people trying to do D&D stuff, and it's one of the better ones. It's definitely one of the better
amazing.
Ones. It's fun.
Yeah,
it's a lot of fun.
Well, I think it's because they all get into it and they get it. They're not like
you gotta
fucking embrace it.
Yes,
you can't be like
you can't tepidly.
No. So
you gotta just own up to your role, and they do, and they're very good at that.
Kudos to you, Josh, Nicole, Tyler, and Dave. You fucking wrecked it in that aspect. You committed and you stayed committed for fucking like I think like 5 or 6 episodes of a campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Like very nice.
Yeah.
It was an enjoyable listen. So
absolutely. So that said, I know nothing about Cthulhu. This is one aspect of nerddom, geekdom that just I don't even say it didn't click with me because I just don't think I've given it a chance. Like, I've never really delved into any of the Lovecraft stuff ever. Okay. I think Hellboy is the closest I've come to Lovecraft.
Yep, Hellboy gets very Cthulhu-ish. Also, the end of Cabin in the Woods is Cthulhu-ish.
Is it?
Yes.
Okay.
Because they awaken the... I mean, even though we as the audience are the stand-ins for the old ones that they awaken and try to appease, but they're still very tentacle-esque. I don't think that the thing is Cthulhu or Eldritch Horror-esque.
Okay.
Because it's always been more of an insect-like aspect to me.
I would say it's even more insect-like in this 2011 one. They really lean into the insect stuff.
But even in both versions, a lot of times when you get the transformations and stuff.
Oh, you do get the head, like, the chest defibrillator scene. Like the head falls off and turns into a spider.
It's like a cicada-like warble that you hear that.
Okay, yeah.
That's a very insect sound.
Yeah, that's right.
The 2011 one, it's the very first form that breaks out of the ice is
so
insect-like. Insect.
Yeah.
I
think, they open up even like it's like a carapace inside. That's also a great practical effect is like when you see the corpse of the first monster
and, it's like
and the person inside.
Yeah. It's like in the process of absorbing him.
Imagine that, but everywhere when it comes to the monster.
I know, man. I agree. It's a testament of too much studio involvement.
Like, yeah, I think so. And that's a sad thing about most movies is this
because
it's not one artist. It is a committee making a movie.
But when John Carpenter was making The Thing in 1979 or 1980, like that was John Carpenter doing it. He had that vision.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you bring in a group of studio heads or boards or execs that try to recreate that, there's too many chiefs.
Yeah. Too many cooks.
Yeah. Too many cooks.
Very nice. Many cooks. What is there a large community out there saying this is Cthulhu based?
Some people do believe, because I mean there also is like some tentacle aspect, but the tentacles are not like to me Cthulhu esque stuff. Tentacles are always like octopus or squid like.
Okay.
And there are tentacles in the thing, but they don't have like the suction. They're just kind of like appendages.
Tendrils, or not even tendrils. Yeah, tendrils, right?
They just kind of flail about and maybe grab you.
Mm-hmm.
But they grab you in more of a whip fashion.
Yes. They even make the fucking whip sounds, yeah.
So, Ryan, on a scale of... Shit, I don't know what to fucking do here.
I say do a Conan O'Brien, different scale every fucking episode
like
for
that.
Whatever.
I'm trying to
just complete nonsense.
Just to make it a referential point. On a scale of... On a scale of 1 to 8 for squid tentacles...
Okay.
What would you rate, with 8 obviously being the best, The Thing 2011?
I'd give it 5 tentacles.
Okay.
I'd give it 5 tentacles.
You know what? I'm going to completely agree. 5.
Yeah.
Wholeheartedly.
Awesome.
It is above average, on the cusp of great, but not quite there.
Yeah. It's hindered.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate.
Yep.
Yeah.
Totally agree, though. Very nice.
That's crazy. Will we ever have a same score again?
I don't know, man.
I don't know. I really thought I was going to be a lot more positive on this one than you were coming into it.
No, I really... It's crazy because this was only my second time, but I did enjoy it a lot more this time. Again, I pushed myself to not compare it to the original version, the John Carpenter version. So.
I had about the same reaction from my first viewing as to this viewing. Except last year we did the original thing, and then like it made my estimation of this one drop. I was like, "Oh, it's gonna be horrible. I don't want to go back to it." And I was like, "Oh no, it's actually okay. It's okay. It's good. Okay, no, it's still good. It's fine."
Man, how fucking awesome is that 1980 thing?
The best.
Oh my god, it's good.
Last year,
been awesome is that we've been watching it again on the coming.
It's really hard to talk and not just like stare straight at, like because these effects are so good.
Yeah.
But last year we had what? The Thing. We had American Werewolf in London. We had Resident Evil 4.
I think that was it because we didn't get
We did have a fourth one. I was like, we had just knockouts. We didn't because we had Until Dawn.
Oh, we did do Until
Dawn.
And
that was a pooper.
That was very bad.
That was a pooper. Yeah. I was like, last year was just like all the hits.
Yeah.
And this year might not be.
What's crazy is that for the most part, even still with like even people that listen, I think... We're in the minority when it comes to Until Dawn. A lot of people like that.
It's not.
Dude, it's not good
great.
At all. Like, even for, like, a horror game, everything about it is not fucking good, so.
It's not a good choose-your-own-adventure game. It's not a good horror movie story. All the characters are unlikable. If you want to hear more, listen to our podcast from last year.
Yeah.
Otherwise, Kyle, it's been a pleasure talking about scary movies with you, buddy.
Yeah, I think it's crazy because we've kind of messed up the format here. Coming out of Stoner Movie September, we're going right back into 2 movies. But honest, it's because of sound engineer Andrey. We do have to
a little
give
bit.
Sound engineer Andrey, at the time of this recording, will be in South Korea.
He
is traveling for work, so we're
doing a bunch of stuff with tentacles. But
in South Korea, he's raping Korean girls with tentacles.
Yeah, it's his favorite pastime.
It's his job. He has to do it. So don't judge him.
If he doesn't, who will?
Yes, exactly.
Who will?
But no, we got some games on the docket to come back and talk about.
Yeah, I'd say we have them cemented.
Yeah, we do.
But I don't know if I'm going to make it through one of them.
I don't know if I'll make it through either of them. And what sucks, like, I wish we would have done another one. We might, I don't know. We'll talk about it off air.
Yeah, we might.
But anyways, until then, we'll catch you next time. I am Kyle.
I'm Ryan.
And thank you guys, as always, for listening.
Thank you so much.
The absolute best.
Yeah, we wouldn't. I mean, I'd say we wouldn't do this podcast if more for you, but that's why we do this podcast anyway.
Yeah.
But we're glad somebody is out there listening.
We really are.
Thank you, Micah.
I was going to say that too. Thank you, Micah. You guys are the best, though. Thank you, guys. We'll catch you on the next episode, which will be The Evil Within. Bye, everybody.
Thank you so much for listening to our episode. We really hope you enjoyed it. If you did enjoy it, you can check us out at experiencegrind.com or find us over at facebook.com/experiencegrind.
Watch me play games on twitch.tv/experiencegrind.
We really like money. We really like money. We really like money. You should give us your money.
Find us on Patreon. Just search for Experience Grind Podcast.
Email us at experiencegrindpodcast@gmail.com. It's current year.
Follow us if you like butt stuff.